Hey.
Hello.
How are you?
Happy to hear your voice after this weekend.
Same.
I'm okay. I was in this weird wormhole of today. I woke up at 4 a.m. and I had a bit of time to just, scroll through some messages and posts. And the weekend was all very weird because it was Father's Day, and also it was the day of medical worker in Ukraine. And my only surviving grandma is a medical worker, and I really miss my father. So I was really kind of homesick, and I was scrolling through my pictures from southern Ukraine and from Donbas and my trips. And I end up finding this, I forgot about it, but it was the most therapeutic video of cats in Kramatorsk that I filmed for, like, they're just purring and they just congregate around me in a pack. And I remember it was such a lovely memory. And I just hope Kramatorsk stays strong and Donbas stays strong, despite everything that is happening now, and I wish to come back very soon. How about
Yeah,
you?
I saw your posts about the cats and really enjoyed them, so thank you for sharing that with everyone. I'm just very happy today. I know we are living through very weird times, but the Ukrainian parliament just voted for something we've been fighting for the past 4 years, which is the Istanbul Convention. And whenever I talk about it, it's so like I think some people just don't understand how like big of a step this is for us, and it's nice to have something to celebrate as well. It's basically,
Can you explain it a bit for people who might not know why it's such a big thing and why Ukraine prioritized it, this reform, even amid genocide?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think Olena Shevchenko would probably talk about it better than I will. And if anyone wants to know a bit more, just follow Women's March Ukraine on Instagram or Twitter for more information. But essentially, it's like the mechanism that allows countries that sign on to it tackle violence against women and domestic violence. And essentially, it's just a series. It's based on four pillars, so it's like looking to have it's intended to have quite like a comprehensive approach to dealing with violence against women and domestic violence. And if anyone wants the very precise details, I'll retweet the post on that from Women's March. But essentially, it's about prevention of violence against women, protection of victims of domestic violence and violence against women, prosecution of people who commit these crimes, and then also just coordinated policies, which is more work with civil society, NGOs, and other people, so that we can essentially have, as I said, like a comprehensive approach to dealing with this as a problem. And I think it's like a big symbolic step for us to show that we are moving further and further away from the past, the Russian colonial past. And, you know, in Russia, I think domestic violence, they just like decriminalized it or something. I might be spreading fake news, but anyway, we're
No,
moving ahead.
you're not.
We're
But
moving
yeah,
ahead and leaving them behind, and it's amazing.
I posted, I penned the tweet by Marcia Nok, Women's March, that actually explains a bit in detail why it's important. And also, I think I tweeted this morning when I saw this beautiful news from Moldova that also got, was recommended for EU candidate status last week, but they had pride in Chisinau over weekend, and for the first time ever, a number of members of Moldovan parliament and government officials joined the pride. And I just tweeted that people do not realize how this tragedy in Ukraine is actually accelerating decolonization process across the region, like turbocharges. And people also do not understand that homophobia, institutionalized homophobia, misogyny, racism, xenophobia, those are mostly things that are definitely a colonial leftovers from Russian colonial rule in the region. That's why it's so important for us to prioritize those reforms these days, despite everything, despite that we face existential threat. I think this is where we can actually go to Mariam at the moment. Mariam, hey, are you with us?
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we do. Feel free to take it the way you want to take it. Do you want to reintroduce yourself, or we can jump right into chatting?
I guess it would be nice if I can just say a couple of words about me, because otherwise I can imagine it could be a bit confusing. So my name is Mariam Nayem, and I have a degree in cultural studies. This is my passion. And that's why every time I'm looking right now at the problem with Ukraine and Russia, I see a lot of cultural roots. But when I talk about culture, I don't mean art. It's more our way of living and everything that people or person can create. And what is also important about me, and I guess it actually took some time for me to embrace this part of myself, is I'm half Afghani. My father was from Afghanistan, but I was born and raised in Kyiv. So I guess I'm also kind of that Ukrainians who are mixed. And that's it. This is too, I guess, important information to know.
Yeah, and also you have definitely, just to add to everyone who hasn't met Mariam yet, is that you check your sources so thoroughly. I've been just like in total admiration of each one of your posts is so well researched, and I really like just really think that people should follow you and trust your research and opinions on a lot of topics. So just to say that, Mariam, Maxim and I were like fangirling, I was gonna say, over your recent post and tweet about the current generation of Ukrainians and the generation that has basically grown up in independent Ukraine. And I think it just like so well described what many of us feel and felt and our background in such a succinct way. And we were just wondering, we just wanted to bring you back here to talk about that as well, and for you to explain to people a little bit more about that. But can I ask you, why did you write that post? What motivated you to speak about the generation, our generation, I guess?
One of my best friends, he is writing what he is doing. We knew each other, I guess, already for 11 years or something like that. And we were, you know, it was after my brother was at hospital, and we just had this chatting to kind of stop thinking about war and start to talk about something else. And we started to talk about our past, how we started to hang out together. And it hit me when I realized that we had only 1 year. He had only 1 year after his school and before the revolution. So he has only 1 year of his adult life when he could have been be just normal student with normal life. And Pablo is a little bit is a bit younger than me, so it was so I feel so sorry for him, like, because it's my friend and I want him to live better life. But at some point I realized it's not only him, it's actually whole generation. And I thought this is something that it's not very clear for people who are not living in Ukraine, because there is a lot of cultural context in our generation, in the way how we dealing with war and what we need supplies, for example. Because this is, for me, like, extraordinary that there is volunteers who are doing stuff that typically governments are doing. So I guess it's very interesting. So for me, it was like, I need to talk about this and to try to explain this as, if I can say, very beautiful, but in a way, very tragic story of our generation.
I think it was definitely connected. I mean, you say so in the first sentence, but with the death of Roman Ratushny on the front line, who was one of our most prominent, young, brilliant activists, democracy defenders, civil society fighters. And I think it hit so many of us so hard, even those who didn't know him in person, because we all saw a bit of ourselves in him, and it just struck, you know, a nerve. Understanding that we sacrifice all the time so much for our country without any complaints. This is not complaining whatsoever. You do it almost instinctively. But then all these events and the revolutions we have, I mean, I went through two revolutions and then recessions and then the first invasion and then pandemic and everything. It kind of also brings you to this a bit sad reality that there's so much potential that already been undercut by all these events in our lives in recent 30 years. But also now those lives are being violently stolen from us as well by something as invasion and genocide.
After Roman's death, it was kind of for me obvious, okay, it's not just an ordinary 20 years old guy. Because when you look at his biography, the amount of time that he spent on Ukraine and our society and amount of people like him that we have right now, and they also try to fight this Russian invasion. I guess I also wanted to show this is not an ordinary activist. That there is a story behind him, behind his shoulders. There is a story of generation. And again, his life is a very good representation on what we already lost. And I hope we won't lose more.
I think it's just such an important thing to, you know, here we always in Ukrainian spaces come to try and talk to people outside of Ukraine about a lot of these things and educate them. And I think what you spoke about the generation specifically is just so important, because I think, and I want to ask you about this a little bit more, but my personal observation has been also that, like, because of, like, you know, as you said, we've gone through, I'm 30, I'm turning 30 in a week, and I've gone, as well as you described, like, through several revolutions, now this, and I think that is partially why it frustrates me that people, when people talk about, you know, how scared Russians within Russia are right now, and that's why they're not rising up, and that's why they're sitting and accepting the fate, and that's why this, and that's why that. As someone who has gone through so much political upheaval, activism, and change, it's just so hard to comprehend why that is the case and why people don't actually stand up and fight for what's important to them. And I think that's like, and I think sometimes that's the thing that is really missing from the Western view on how we Ukrainians see the whole situation and why we feel so frustrated a lot of the time, and especially in instances when people who have been leading some of this change get killed in this senseless war. It just highlights it even more.
I think we often also joke about the Eastern European and / Ukrainian age packs so much more than, say, the same age in the West. So, for example, if you're in your mid-30s, like myself, it feels sometimes like I lived several lifetimes, because I'm probably, out of three of us, I'm probably the oldest one, because I'm 36. But just taking folks, and you do it terrifically in your thread as well, you take folks on this timeline of a journey, explaining what kind of major events impacted our generation, starting from, of course, the fall of the Soviet rule, and then horrific poverty that I remember very vividly. We struggled even to put some food on our table in some days. And of course, it robbed us a lot of opportunities as a generation in terms of everything. I mean, that was a horrific poverty. And then after that, we had the Orange Revolution in 2004, when Ukrainians rose up to defend their democracy for the first time against rigged election and pro-Russian regime. And then we had, of course, like everybody else, one recession, then another one, then revolution 2014 against again pro-Russian kleptocracy that wanted to turn us into an autocratic state, and then Russian invasion, and now genocide. So, I mean, I understand that it's a lot to pack, understand and process even for foreigners, but your family is also amazingly prominent along this Ukrainian journey. I mean, your brother Mustafa is one of the faces of the Maidan revolution of 2014.
For example, Mustafa, when he started to be, he was, I guess I was 8 when he became a journalist. It was like his hobby or not. And here I want to highlight that he was studying, kind of engineering of aircraft or something like that. And why I think it's important, it's also kind of very typical for Ukrainians to have a degree in one area, but switch totally during your life couple of times, because again, you didn't have a very understandable way of pursuing your career. So it's kind of normalized, and it's not very big surprise right now to have person that changed career a couple of times. And to be honest, most of my friends, they changed career a couple of times. I myself changed career five times already. So it was interesting then that my brother, he was just trying to find a way to feed himself. He just became journalist. And this is when Orange Revolution started. And he realized, okay, this is apparently for him, this is his way, his career. But even now, he's no longer journalist already for, I don't know, I think 8 years or something like that. So, and I remember for Revolution of Dignity, that post that he wrote on Facebook, I right now what I'm saying to you, it's kind of fun story, but because I never share that. I remember how I read in some Western media that Mustafa was paid for the post because he wrote a post about that kind of make the spark of a revolution of dignity. And after that, people just, it wasn't revolution at that point, it was just protests. I read a lot in some websites that Mustafa was paid for that. And I was always laughing about that because at that day when the revolution started, I actually came also on Maidan, but I came too because my brother, he owed me $100 because he needed money. Like, because at that point, I think I worked in a museum or something. So it was every time it hit me so much that it's so opposite of the truth, like that it's so not how it was. So of course my other brother Masi, he became also part of the Revolution of Dignity, which is was completely normal at that point, but also we thought he would become just an ordinary lawyer, but even here he couldn't be just a normal lawyer because he did a lot of stuff. He did a lot of stuff pro bono for free, just for activists. Because at some point, as I talk about this in the thread, that we had a lot of problems with corruption and we have a lot of problem with police system. So, and typically when there is one person who tried to fight the system, typically this person will lose anyway. So it was also important for my brother to do something for free, and he is doing a lot of that for free. And after his injury, I was, you know, when people start to write posts about him, I was shocked how many people were actually involved with him. Like, they worked together and he actually helped them. So, and it was also interesting to see my father's reaction, because he didn't even expect it from his kids after he moved from Afghanistan to become important part of Ukrainian, not the revolution, but evolution, let's call it that way. And it was interesting to see that he was very calmly, you know, when your father don't say that to you, but you know he's proud. And I also always saw that. that for my father, immigrant, it was very important that his kids are part of the Ukrainian culture. And also it's kind of his tribute to say thank you for this country to be motherland now.
Yeah, and now you're leading the charge as well on educating audiences yourself. So don't play that short. And Mariam, I was just going to say as well, you were talking about that first post that your brother made. And just for context of going back to the generation that is us, I still on my bookshelf up until this day, and I actually quote it like every time I teach publicly or talk, you know, to people publicly. I still have a book which is 300 pages of basically Facebook posts from the Revolution of Dignity that cover the events and like the emotions and the stories and everything that surrounds that. And I think our generation, in addition to going through so much stuff, we also went through like a massive rise of social media that has allowed us to become so, I think, good at telling our stories, which is what you've been doing so skillfully over the past, I think, well, 3 months that I've seen, but beyond that, of course, as well. And I asked Maxim this question when you were trying to reconnect. But I was just wondering, what's your first, same question to you, what is your first like memory of activism or doing something, you know, like that represents that feeling that you were trying to describe in your thread about our generation?
This is a complicated question. Oh my God. I guess, you know, I was a kid when my brother became a kind of known journalist. So, and because so far in Ukraine, there is only 5 people with my surname. So it was kind of obvious for everyone that we are related. And I, till by now, I'm struggling with this, with his shadow. And every time, of course, I have haters due to this fact. They all always connected us and all of that. So that's why when my activism was a little bit different than my brother's, because I didn't want it to sound the same, you know what I mean? And that's why I guess if I try to be sincere here. So I guess my first activism was when I wrote on at 2 a.m. in the center of the city when the war ever start ever end? Sorry. It was 2 a.m. and I just asked my friends to, and I remember I was even running from police, and it was like first statement that was only my voice, and I didn't even sign it because I didn't want anyone to know who wrote this. But after 8 years, I can talk about this. So I guess for me, this is something that kind of changed my perception of my activism, because I also was kind of scared to say anything before. And to be honest, we as a family, we had a lot of threats during the Revolution of Dignity, so I was almost not allowed to go on the street at that point, because we had a lot of police next to specifically for us. So we even kind of forced to run from our apartment at some point, because we knew that somebody can come to us. So, yes, for me, it was, I guess, that time when I took my painting just by the street and wrote something.
I remember when I decided that I need to do something about it, because my anger was kind of overpowering me. I mean, I went through living in poverty and, you know, facing injustice and corruption. And then the revolution, 2004 revolution started. And I remember that I was just like 17-year-old reporter. And then this police comes during one of the rallies in Eastern Ukraine. And they just grabbed me and put me in police van, just like to scare me off as a kid. But, you know, there were like really, really nasty stuff happening in that van. And after that, I was just so infuriated. I was full of hate and anger, but I don't know how I just decided like I cannot contain this and carry with me. I need to do something. And for me to tell stories and double down on journalism was the way to go. I just didn't want that hate to be inside, ruining me from inside. And I know we talked about this as well recently, because we all feel much more rage and hate because we witness our people being murdered in genocide. So isn't it something maybe that also helps you to channel it, like storytelling? I suspect it may be, but you can tell it better if it is.
You know, I'm not a big fan of quoting, and especially quoting of Hollywood stars. But once I heard that, and it kind of, I guess this is the best definition. I guess it was Meryl Streep who told once, I guess, during one of her Oscars or something, take your broken heart and make it into the art. And this is, I guess, what I'm trying to do with the anger. And to be honest, I had, and I have plenty of anger, even before the war, but of course, especially now. I just try to make this from, I try to make it to the constructive force. When I thought that my brother might not survive, I for a couple of hours I was thinking, what is the point now? But and I became again very very angry, and I thought, okay, no, it's not important. It's not important if he will survive or not. Doesn't mean that I should stop. I need to continue because I need to put I need to make something constructive from this anger. So yes, I guess this is very true.
I think what we're sharing is very important also for foreigners to understand. It feels like, again, like a therapy session, but I just feel like angry Ukrainians and angry Eastern Europeans are literally the best kind of my people that I've ever seen. Because, of course, when you trying to connect with other people from different places, and of course, you know, through my work, I would really connect with many disfranchised communities and folks from different marginalized backgrounds. And of course, this issue with anger, when you face so much injustice and unfair treatment through your whole life, this can easily become out of control. But what I always see with fellow Ukrainians, that no matter what you do, no matter what kind of background you come from, a lot of us, especially from our generation, channeled that frustration and anger and hate into something productive. And I don't know if it's a just generational thing or it's a happenstance, but this is something that I feel and see in many friends over the last years. Is it something you also see in your fellow Ukrainians as well, or is it just me?
Yes. And to be honest, here I can say before, we needed some specific, you know, it was interesting. At some point, I realized that during my, when I was a teenager, we had a lot of subcultures, you know, like emo and goth and like people who like rap or something. And I was at some point very interested why right now kids don't have it. Why is such a cultural thing that was very typical during my school age, why it's not typical anymore? And I found very interesting research saying that right now, because of social media, kids don't need anymore try to show that they are part of the group, because they can find this part of the group or listeners in the internet or from social media. And it actually explained to me a lot why we have kind of constructive way to express our anger in something more constructive, because you have your bubble at some point. This bubble could be very small. The bubble could be like much bigger or something, but again, I guess this is why it's kind of more constructive. Even though you are not very comfortable to make Instagram posts or Twitter threads, some people just doing they're just talking, or they're doing a community session just to talk to each other how they can help each other. So I guess the internet here helps us to convert this anger to something that can actually make evolution of our society.
Yeah, social media platforms actually pay us for us. This is the best promotion of social media platform I've ever heard. But also, just like, imagine, let's extrapolate to the whole country, right? So just imagine you caught, I mean, for most people, it's unimaginable, but you're caught in a mid-genocide. You see so much, the most horrendous shit about humanity you can possibly witness. And yet Ukrainians, instead of just, you know, being full of hate, lynching people on the streets or whatever, or trying to, you know, do the same to the people who are doing genocide to us, we're a lot of us channeling into something productive, like our lawmakers are passing fucking reforms amid the bombings. You know, people volunteer, do storytelling. We do these Ukrainian spaces. You know, even with Russian colonialism awareness, I see that a lot of people find this, a lot of Ukrainians find this energy to bring this awareness not only abroad, but also within the country, because this is something that helps you to make sense of what is happening. And you feel like it's just was unjust that so many people wouldn't talk about it as much. So this is just wow. Yeah. Sorry, it's not a question. It's just more of a comment. Yeah.
But to be honest, like you... sorry.
Go ahead. You go ahead.
Thank you. So there is, I guess, you know, I have these phrases in my head for like from the beginning on our of our talk, and I thought it's better maybe to share about this now. So for me, I had a very good example of how you could face so much evil in your life, but in the end of the day, still be very nice and joyful person with sense of humor. And I realized that from a very young age. My grandmother, Magol, she was 12 when she gave a birth first time. And when I realized all the story of my father, and when I realized that he will at some point pass away, I started to write a book about him and took some interviews from his life. And the more I knew about his life, I became more shocked because, so for example, I remember I asked him, so my father was third kid, and I asked him, so you remember your mother, and you know we have this image of mother as something big and something very safe. And I said, so you remember your mother as a teenager? And he said, yes. And this is something, and there is a lot of course, like horrible other stories that he told me about his mother. She was never be able to read, how they eat basically bread, or my favorite dessert of my brother's was snow with sugar. And I remember when I started to realize how many awful things and how it was unnecessary to live through all of these horrible events. How in the end of the day, my father still was a very joyful person who were making a lot of jokes, who never complained about it until the end of his days. He was working in the market. So for me, the most important part right now of my work in my book is to realize if this person was able to be happy, to laugh after all of these events, it is possible for us also.
But we've been talking quite a bit about sort of, you know, the need for us Ukrainians, and obviously, you know, with a respectful approach, but still the importance for us to talk about the fact that we're continuing to live life, and, you know, it's in the interest of the enemy to stop us from doing that. So it's good and okay to talk about the fact that, like, you know, life does go on. And you told me and shared with me, I don't know if you want to share it now, Maxim and I are like rattling out all your personal conversations with us today in this Twitter space, but you shared. You know what I'm talking about, right?
Yes. So after I realized my brother has this injury, no, okay, it's I think we should put it that way. After realize he survived, and after realize it is still him, and I realized that, okay, we need to go on. I need to start to prepare to leave with my brother's condition, which is completely, again, I'm very happy that everything is fine, but it's a big change. So I remember I decided to talk to military therapist to discuss how I should behave, how I should talk, because I realized that I don't know anything about military psychology. And I remember I was talking to this therapist and said that I'm trying to imitate that I'm also part of the battlefield. And the therapist said, ask me why you don't need that. Because actually, and I talk about this with my brother, that it's never inspiring when someone is suffering. What is inspiring when another person is living their life, having fun, saying good stuff in life, and you know why you're fighting for. Because if you will continue to show your brother that you are suffering, he won't understand for what he lost his eye. And it's hit me so much when I realized that actually we need to continue to live our life and try to have fun and feel joyful, stop shaming ourselves to feeling happy. Because I realized third week of war when I cried because I felt happy for a couple of seconds, but in the same time I feel ashamed of that. And all of these mixed feelings kind of, yeah, it's interesting. And I guess it's kind of, it's interesting how complicated we are. So, and I realized after all of that, that I need to highlight, I need to live my life and have fun, be happy, I guess. Yeah. Allow myself to be happy.
Yeah.
Because there is a price and somebody's paying for that.
Yeah. And the other thing that you said as well is, and I want to highlight it here, I know we're going slightly off topic of what we were initially here to talk about, but you highlighted something that's really important, that I think we've reached a point right now where a lot of us Ukrainians feel similar things, but we don't talk to each other about it. And so we're like, sort of like in this like self-inflicted isolation a lot of the time about a lot of the feelings that we're experiencing, including what you're talking about, but in obviously in very different ways, but sort of this like constant guilt and constant, I don't know, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes,
but essentially,
yes.
It's just we don't talk to each other about it or open up to each other about it, and we don't have, we always feel guilty to do that sometimes. And I'm just like grateful that you reached out as well and were like, let's talk about this, we need to talk about it and move forward. So
but also great. Guys, I think this is what connects us to millennial generation everywhere else, because we're extra aware of our feelings and we spend time talking about them, which is such a millennial thing to do. This contrast is always very fascinating for me. I mean, like, we love our flat whites and talk about our feelings and, you know, basically watching the same shows and listening to some music other millennials everywhere else. On the other side, we have this a separate life of, you know, fighting for democracy, for freedom, going to rallies, you know, some of us go to front lines, putting their life on the line, whether it's like, you know, on a pride march or, you know, on some rallies or in Donbas. And it's just always fascinating for me. I wish and I hope we will tell more of those stories to the rest of our millennial generation, because I find it so fascinating in the global context, not only just for us as Ukrainians.
I can verify that Maxim has a lot of cactus plants and plants in general, just to...
Don't end up a generation, a lost generation, right? A generation with undercut potential, because we face so much shit through our, you know, 30 plus years of lives. But maybe you also have a bit of, you know, message out there, especially for our fellow Ukrainians who are listening, I see, you know,
yes,
how not to end up in that place personally, mm-hmm, or as a generation.
I guess after my father lost, when my father passed away, I never want to say that it will be better, but you don't believe in that at the beginning. And at some point I realized that with horrible events in your life, somehow you became more sensitive or more deep as a person. And because of that, the opposite of, I don't know, of horrible stuff, you feel much, much more sensitive to the happiness, you know what I mean? Like, it's much brighter after you faced very war or genocide. For example, right now, I know how it happened even before. But right now, I'm so grateful, like every day. I'm so grateful that they're just there. And you know, this feeling of gratefulness when you have this warm tickling in your body. Like, I know that if not the war, I will never felt it. So I guess it's important to embrace this experience, not try to run away from it, because there is, I know it's a strange way to say, but there is good social impact from the war. And we will see it, and we already experience it. We just, like, it's not so obvious.
Thank you for sharing that as well. And before we finish, a massive shout out to Maria, who's here. I can see you, who's been helping us and has joined our Ukrainian Spaces family, and Veronica as well. And to everyone, I'm just so happy. I'm going to screenshot this to see so many faces from our Ukrainian Spaces community coming back to listen to us and join us.
Family.
And,
family.
family. Exactly. Community / family. And Mariam as well, thank you for coming back to us. It's been really nice to have you again. We clearly all have way too much to talk about, so I'm sure it will happen another time.
Thank you. Thank you a lot.
Okay, guys. The last thing is Slava Ukraini.
Heroim Slava.
Heroim Slava.
See you next time.
Bye.
Love you all. Bye.